the deeper meaning behind the words, and then take those words and teach and understand the lessons that they teach us and to help us have a better life. So that's really what we're here for, and that's what we're doing today. Our church is probably a little churchier than you're used to. If you went into one of our churches, you'd probably, if you weren't listening to the metaphysical explanations, you'd think you were in the Methodist church. That's how churchy we get sometimes. So it's going to be a little bit of a churchy flair today. We sort of warned Bill ahead of time, but we thank you for accommodating us. And that little write-up on metaphysical healing is wonderful. I really like that. It was just a perfect explanation. So what we're doing today, our discussion is going to be about forgiveness, which is an element of healing. And then afterwards, we're going to have a guided meditation, and we're going to be working with the chakra chimes and the crystal bowls to do a chakra alignment. And you'll be guided through that with some help from Reverend Randy. And we hope you enjoy what you see today. When Bill said we had to talk for 35 or 40 minutes, I thought, gosh, our sermons are only 10 minutes. So we found a nice way. This is something that we created about 7 years ago at our church in the D.C. area for New Year's as a renewal service. And it was so popular, we thought we'd share it with you. It was a good way to fill the time up. So we hope you enjoy it. So with that in mind, our discussion today, our lecture today is inspired by the book of Matthew, chapter 18, verses 21 through 35, as found in the Common English Version of the Bible, which reads, "Then Peter said to Jesus, 'Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Should I forgive as many as 7 times? Jesus said, 'Not just 7 times, but rather as many as 70 times 7. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle accounts, they brought to him a servant who owed him 10,000 bags of gold. Because the servant didn't have enough to pay it back, the king ordered that everything he had should be sold, and that the proceeds should be taken as payment. But the servant fell down, kneeled before him, and said, "Please be patient with me. I will pay you back." The king had compassion on that servant, released him, and forgave the loan. When that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 coins. He grabbed him around the throat and said, "Pay me back what you owe me." Then his fellow servant fell down and begged him, "Please be patient with me. I'll pay you back." But he refused. Instead, he threw him into prison until he paid back his debt. When his fellow servants saw what happened, they were deeply offended. They came and told the king all that had happened. The king called the first servant and said, "You wicked servant, I forgave all that debt because you appealed to me. Shouldn't you have also had mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had mercy on you?" The king was furious and handed him over to the guard responsible for punishing prisoners until he had paid the whole debt. Jesus concludes, "My heavenly Father will also do the same to you if you don't forgive your brother and sister from your heart." Thus ends the scripture. Those who don't forgive the past are doomed to repeat it. This pronouncement came to me in a moment of meditation recently, and it's based on a phrase that's commonly used in reference to the Holocaust. Those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. This is a whole new spin, and somehow it seems fitting that the words forgive and forget are tied together through similar sayings. I noticed recently that there are a significant number of people in my circle of family and friends who've had issues with their parents, some to the point where they couldn't stand being around them or hear their voice. One person actually contemplated inflicting bodily harm on his father at one time. I was once a member of this group of unhappy children, angry at things my father did or didn't do, and at his lack of awareness of what the impact of his actions might have been. This observation of a common thread really got me thinking. Who these people are, or what caused their anger that they harbor, is not the issue right now, just that they are still harboring it and learning to get past it. Anger is a powerful emotion, and it can consume us if we let it. It is somehow easier to be angry at someone who did something we don't like or who hurt us than it is to forgive them and let it go. Forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting. It doesn't mean that what they did is okay. In many cases, people do things, like my father, with completely innocent intentions and just not realizing the negative impact of the things that they've done. Others do things intentionally, which by all means should not be forgotten, lest they be repeated, as the saying goes. Either way, the challenge is keeping an event or a series of events from inspiring us to consume ourselves in anger, hatred, or fear. I think it might be in our nature to hold on to the negative experiences that we have. How come it's so easy to remember the pain, but so much harder to remember the pleasures in our life? Perhaps it's a defense mechanism of sorts, maybe a statement of our expectations. Being comfortable and happy meets our expectations, while anger, fear, and unhappiness do not, so maybe they stand out more. What is worse is that every time we remember such an experience, we relive it. The emotions and the sensations of our surroundings at the time come back to us almost instantly. It may be triggered by a voice, it may be triggered by a sound or music, or just a thought. These memories become a curse. They keep that moment alive. The person whom we perceive as having inflicted that situation upon us may have long since forgotten what they did or that it ever happened. Maybe they were never aware at all. The situation that we remember has been lost to the universe, except in our minds, and maybe in an Akashic record somewhere. It is we who keep the situation alive, over and over again, sometimes every day, sometimes almost constantly. There is an expression that goes, "No one can hurt us unless we let it happen." What I just described is an example of letting them. There's also an expression, "Let go and let God." It means that we should stop dragging our past behind us and let God or the universe worry about it so that we can move ahead unencumbered. And what you'll find, you'll notice that we have little bracelets that Randy and I wear, these little purple bracelets that say "Let go and let God." And we've actually brought some with us to share with you today. The website on them doesn't work anymore, but the saying is just as powerful. Instead of letting them, try letting God. It is not an easy thing to do. But once we let go of that tether that hangs around our necks and stop dragging the weight of our experiences behind us like a huge boulder, we find that our load is light, our burdens are fewer, and we become much more positive and productive in our experience. So how do we let go and let God? There are a number of ways. For some of us, it may just be as simple as looking objectively at the situation. Instead of re-experiencing it from our point of view, we can try looking at the situation as if we were an innocent bystander. What really happened? Was anyone really to blame? Did I take something the wrong way? Was it really as bad as I made it out to be? Were others really hurt? Or did I simply feel that they should, or did I simply think that they should feel that way simply because I did? For others, it may be a matter of talking it out. Be honest and respectful. Tell the person how you feel and why. Tell them that you've been hurt. Maybe they will understand. Maybe they will realize the error of their ways and ask you for your forgiveness. Maybe they will explain what they were thinking at the time that it happened, and you will see it in a new light and realize that there was nothing really to keep holding on to after all. Maybe all of the above. For yet others, the act of letting go may be more difficult. There may have been physical or mental abuse that left deeper scars to heal. This might require counseling to overcome. It may mean stepping farther back and realizing what other outcomes might have happened that could have been far worse. It may be understanding that we might have chosen these experiences as part of our life's path, so we can understand and relate to this experience, or as a way of redeeming a karmic debt for something that we did to someone else in a previous life. What goes around comes around. It may be coming around for us, or we may be teaching someone else how to deal with it when it comes around for them. Our scripture lesson is known as the parable of the unmerciful servant. It deals with forgiveness and the fact that sometimes we have to forgive the same deed over and over again to keep the memory of it from overcoming us. Peter asked Jesus if forgiving someone seven times is enough. And Jesus replied that one must forgive 70 times seven times. Now remember that the stories of the Bible were originally passed down through oral tradition. And because most people couldn't read or write, lessons were taught through stories. Like Aesop's fables, the stories taught moral lessons by example. The language of the time used symbolism and numbers to represent value. The number seven represents completeness, much as the story of the creation or completion of our world by the divine source. The larger the number, the more impact was implied when the lessons were taught. So 70 times seven represents far more significant, almost infinite effort and importance than seven. It was an Aramaic way of saying a whole heck of a lot. Though we understand that we don't literally need to forgive someone's deeds exactly seven times, or 77, or 70 times seven, the idea is that if we forgive a person over and over again, our human awareness easily recalls the circumstances, and we continue to relive it in our minds long after the actual deed is long gone. If we forgive enough times in our heart, we can learn to let it go in our mind. We can live with the situation as it stands, releasing it into the ethers as it is, without giving it further consideration or energy. In the story that Jesus gave as an example, the servant owed quite a sum of money. And rather than dwelling on the anger of not being repaid, the king honored the servant's sincere plea for mercy and reacted with love and kindness instead of with selfishness. Forgiving the debt and sparing the man from imprisonment, and at the same time, I'm sure he was easing his own conscience. But not realizing the significance of the gift he had been given, the servant got all hung up over a much smaller amount that another man owed to him. He was presented with the same circumstances, the same opportunity, and rather than responding with the same forgiveness in his heart, he denied the man's plea and had him thrown in jail. Apparently, this man hadn't heard about the Lord's Prayer, mentioned just a few chapters earlier in the book of Matthew: "Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." The king heard about what happened, rescinded his reprieve, and had the unforgiving servant thrown in jail until he could pay his own massive debt. This story illustrates the dynamics of karma, represented through human actions and symbolized by the judgment of God, which represents natural law, things like the law of attraction and the law of cause and effect. When Jesus says, "This is how my Father will treat you unless you can find it in your heart to forgive others," it isn't literally a Father in heaven dictating our life. It is the energy and the actions that we set forth that come back to us in kind. The story is certainly an excellent example of how not to live by the golden rule. More importantly, it shows us how hanging on to a situation without forgiveness can cause us to be imprisoned and tortured, not by a king or a personified deity, but by our own willfulness. One of the founding principles of the metaphysical church is that the doorway to reformation is always open to any soul, here or hereafter. Simply put, it means we have a chance to make good on the error of our ways. It means that all of us are on a path of growth that can take many years, many lives, many centuries, or even much of eternity to reach a level of true understanding. Each one of us is in a different place on that path. And what might be cloudy, or what might be clear to us, may be cloudy to others. And conversely, there's probably somebody looking at us wondering why we just don't get it. We're all at various stages of growth and improvement. It's hard to improve if we don't make mistakes along the way. If we can't help, we can't help it. It's just the way we are. What is also true is that the past is done and cannot be changed. No matter how we wish we could go back and have a situation come out differently, it ain't gonna happen. If we keep holding on to those past experiences, all we're doing is punishing ourselves. It isn't making the other person any better. It certainly isn't making our friends who see us going through this torture any better, and it certainly isn't making us any better. It becomes like a black hole, invisible forces that constantly pull on us from the light. The harder we try to fight it, the harder it pulls back on us. It doesn't mean we have to like the person that was involved in the situation, but we do have to recognize that that person is a fellow human soul on the same path as we are, and they deserve the respect to find their own way, on their own path, on their own journey that we're all on together in some form or another. Here's a little exercise that can help you let go more easily. Think about a situation where you might be harboring anger or repeatedly reliving a negative experience. Think about what really happened, not just what you felt. Think about what could have been worse about that situation and count your blessings. Find something positive that that person has done since then, not as a form of redemption, but as evidence of their growth. Take a moment and close your eyes. And take that situation that you're thinking about, that you keep reliving, and imagine that it is an object that you can hold in your hand. See yourself placing that situation in a box with a tight-fitting lid. Then imagine taking beautiful wrapping paper and bows and wrapping the box as a gift. See yourself holding that beautifully wrapped gift and giving it to the person who gave that situation to you. Imagine their big smile and their feeling of gratitude as they accept that gift without judgment or hesitation. Thank yourself for being mature enough to handle the situation with pride, dignity, and respect. You have now forgiven them, and you have forgiven yourself. You can walk away knowing that you have been relieved of your burden and that you are free from the restraints that you have imposed on yourself by holding on to the past for so long. For me, I was fortunate enough to realize that by shutting my father out and trying to punish him for my unhappiness was only hurting me. I learned to forgive him, and despite the pain I felt, we have learned to appreciate each other, and we've even become friends over the years. Others aren't so lucky, even in my own family. They've created a lifetime of misery and discomfort because of their unwillingness to let go. In some cases, it's something they can't even remember. Holding on to that hatred and anger has punished them far more than it would ever punish the person to whom the anger and hatred were directed. Those who do not forgive the past are doomed to repeat it. Situations will keep coming to us, either in our minds or physically, until we have grown enough to learn and honor the God within and deal with them constructively and forgivingly in this life or the next. Why not save yourself a lot of trouble and let go of it now? I close with a story called The Sands of Forgiveness. The author is not known, but it's such a wonderful story. It's a story of two friends who were walking in the desert. During some point in their journey, they had an argument, and one friend slapped the other one in the face. The one who got slapped was hurt, but without saying anything, he wrote in the sand, "Today, my best friend slapped me in the face." They kept on walking until they found an oasis, where they decided to take a bath. The one who had been slapped got stuck in the mire and started drowning, but his friend saved him. After he recovered from the near drowning, he carved in a stone, "Today, my best friend saved my life." The friend who had slapped him and saved his best friend asked him, "After I hurt you, you wrote in the sand, but now you write on a stone. Why?" The other friend replied, "When someone hurts us, we should write it down in the sand, where the winds of forgiveness can erase it away. But when someone does something good for us, we must engrave it in stone where no wind can ever erase it. Learn to write your hurts in the sand and to carve your benefits in stone." When we truly forgive and let go, There's no need to dwell on the memory of the original situation. Like grains of sand in the desert, in the wind blows them away. And once we let go of the situation, it is hopelessly scattered, and it is impossible to even attempt to reassemble the pieces. And more importantly, there's no reason to try. In the words of Peter Allen, forgiveness is a funny thing. It warms the heart and cools the sting. Blessings to you. Thank you. Now we will continue with our...